Chapter 6. When I bought the Times, its prehistoric building came with the deal. It had very little value. It was on the south side of the Clanton Square, one of four decaying structures built wall to wall by someone in a hurry. Long and narrow, three levels, with a basement that all employees feared and shied away from. There were several offices in the front, all with stained and threadbare carpet, peeling walls, the smell of last century's pipe smoke forever fused to the ceilings. In the rear, as far away as possible, was the printing press. Every Tuesday night, Hardy, our pressman, somehow coaxed the old letterpress to life and managed to produce yet another edition of our paper. His space was rank with the sharp odor of printer's ink. The room on the first floor was lined with bookshelves sagging under the weight of dusty tomes that had not been opened in decades. Collections of history and Shakespeare and Irish poetry and rows of badly outdated British encyclopedias. Spot thought such books would impress anyone who ventured in. Standing in the front window and looking through dingy panes of glass, across which someone had long ago painted the word Times, one could see the Ford County Courthouse and the bronze Confederate sentry guarding it. A plaque below his feet listed the names of the 61 county boys who died in the Great War, most at Shiloh. The sentry could also be seen from my office, which was on the second floor. It, too, was lined with bookshelves holding Spot's personal library, an eclectic collection that appeared to have been as neglected as the one downstairs. It would be years before I moved any of his books. The office was spacious, cluttered, filled with useless artifacts and worthless files, and adorned with fake portraits of Confederate generals. I loved the place. When Spot left, he took nothing, and after a few months, no one seemed to want any of his junk. So it remained where it was, neglected as always, virtually untouched by me, and slowly becoming my property. I boxed up his personal things, letters, bank statements, notes, postcards, and stored them in one of the many unused rooms down the hall, where they continued to gather dust and slowly rot. My office had two sets of French doors that opened to a small porch with a wrought iron railing, and there was enough room out there for four people to sit in wicker chairs and watch the square. Not that there was much to see, but it was a pleasant way to pass the time, especially with a drink. Baggy was always ready for a drink. He brought a bottle of bourbon after dinner, and we assumed our positions in the rockers. The town was still buzzing over the bail hearing. It had been widely assumed that Danny Paget would be sprung as soon as Lucian Wilbanks and Mackie Don Coley could get matters arranged. Promises would be made, money would change hands, Sheriff Coley would somehow personally guarantee the boy's appearance at trial. But Judge Lupus had other plans. Baggy's wife was a nurse. She worked the night shift in the emergency room at the hospital. He worked days, if his rather languid observations of the town could be considered labor. They rarely saw each other, which was evidently a good thing because they fought constantly. Their adult children had fled, leaving the two of them to wage their own little war. After a couple of drinks, Baggy always began the cutting remarks about his wife. He was 52, looked at least 70, and I suspected that the booze was the principal reason he was aging badly and fighting at home. "We kick their butts," he said proudly. "Never before has a newspaper story been so clearly exonerated, right there in open court." "What's a gag order?" I asked. I was an ill-informed rookie, and everybody knew it. No sense in pretending I knew something when I didn't. "I've never seen one. I've heard of them. And I think they're used by judges to shut up the lawyers and the litigants."
"So they don't apply to newspapers?"
"Never. Wilbanks was grandstanding, that's all. The guy is a member of the ACLU, only one in Ford County. He understands the First Amendment. There's no way a court can tell a newspaper not to print something. He was having a bad day. It was apparent his client was staying in jail, so he had to showboat. Typical maneuver by lawyers. They teach it in law school."
"So you don't think we'll get sued?" Hell no. Look, first of all, there's no lawsuit. We didn't libel or defame anyone. Sure, we got kind of loose with some of the facts, but it was all small stuff, and it was probably true anyway. Second, if Wilbanks had a lawsuit, he would have to file it here, in Ford County. Same courthouse, same courtroom, same judge. The Honorable Reed Lupus, who this morning read our stories and declared them to be just fine. The lawsuit was shot down before Wilbanks typed the first word. Brilliant.